Bismillah. So this one is a Polish zikr, and this is it's a zikr phrase used for Polish melody, which was a Polish hymn, which has such beautiful words that mean something like surely. Just as the wheat rises and praises God, and as the birds praise God and all of nature praises God, surely we as human beings can be in that place of just singing praises to the One. So I really love the these words. La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah. La ilaha. Just one more time, and just kind of really bring to your heart, bring to your mind, maybe just any little thing that you might be grateful for in this moment, and that you might feel like singing praises, like saying, "Wow, that's so amazing! I have this one little thing to be grateful for." La ilaha
illallah. La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah.
And feeling the connection with all our brothers and sisters, people who are dear to us. Visualizing, imagining them here with us, even if they physically, for whatever reason, are not here in this moment. Bismillah, Ar-Rahman, Ar-Rahim. We begin in the name of the One who is all mercy and all compassion. So, welcome to this session 9 on the inner life. And as we go on, I don't know about you, but I find myself more and more resonating with what we are reading with Hazrat Inayat Khan words and with Murshid Sam's words, and I think this session is just again going even further into that, just talking about our attitude of love. Yes.
Can I ask a question? I never understood, I'm a beginner in this. I never understood what this tasawuf means when you say that. And I wanted to understand what that means.
Tasawuf is Sufism. Another word for Sufism. But
like
thank you.
Invocation in between, before you go on, or
oh yes.
Yeah,
when
you
I
say it in the text.
Yeah, yes. When I read, I say Gataka, and then I say Tasawuf.
Yeah.
Gataka, these are the words of Hazrat Inayat Khan that he spoke, and Tasawuf, that's Murshid Sam tuning into Hazrat Inayat Khan, into his words, into his atmosphere, and then adding his his experience, his words to that. So in that sense, tasawuf is the practice of Sufism. It's the actively engaging with the words of Hazrat Inayat Khan and bringing them through his own being, through his own experience and his own heart, and expanding on those.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for asking that question. Yeah. Okay, so last time we finished. I'll just read that one last little paragraph from our last time when we finished, because it leads so beautifully into what we are going to be talking about today. It was, as one progresses on the path to God, one also advances on the path with God. One feels the presence of Allah. One drinks in all the beauty of all the beautiful names, and they become part of one's very nature. And so one enters into the universe of love. So this is the backdrop for our today's session, and we are going further into that same theme. So I'm going to be reading for a bit, and then I would like to do a meditation practice that ties in with what we are talking about, and also it's from Buddhist Buddhist practice, but it's the same thing again, really. And then I will read a little bit more and we'll see how we get on. So, Gataka. How happy, therefore, is the one whose beloved is never absent, because the whole tragedy of life is the absence of the beloved. And the one whose beloved is always there, when they have closed their eyes, their beloved is within. When they have opened their eyes, the beloved is without. Their every sense perceives the beloved. Their eyes see God, their ears hear God's voice. Tasavvuf. This is the ultimate state of the beloved ones of God. We have seen it in people not only of the Sufi line, but Swamis like Papa Ramdas, who are God realized, and realizing the God, they realize the love, the beneficence, and the compassion. I don't know if you know of Papa Ramdas, then I don't know if you have read his books, In the Vision of God. If you have not read that book, I highly, highly recommend. It is so inspirational. It is just every page, it's just this, he, Papa Ramdas, was really realized God in a way that that he called everything and everybody Ram. There are so many beautiful stories in that book of his experiences, and it's very, very uplifting book and beautiful to read. There are stories like one time when he was meditating in his room, and then a robber came and wanted to take everything, and Papa Ramdas was just giving him everything, and even his glasses. He needed his he was reading with his glasses, but he just gave everything to that robber. And then saying that, "O Ram, thy ways are wondrous," or something like that he said. And then when his disciples later on came to see and saw everything gone, and he did not have anything, like nothing, nothing, and they said, "Baba Ram Das, how come even your glasses, how can you read without your glasses?" And he was just saying, "Well, maybe I don't need the glasses anymore." So it's just totally, totally inspiring book, so highly recommend it. So on with Tasavvuf now, Murshid Sam's words. They realize these everywhere within and without, these qualities. This becomes their continued state, and one then can see what is in the brochure, the smiling forehead. That's a little brochure of Hazrat Inayat Khan's. It has some poetry and some just sayings of his. Again, very beautiful and inspiring little booklet. This is the natural condition of the divine lover. Gataka. When a person arrives at this realization, then they, so to speak, live in the presence of God. Then to them, the different forms and beliefs, faiths and communities do not count. To them, God is all in all. To them, God is everywhere. And that's what I was just saying about the Papa Ram Das. That's how he truly, truly lived his life. He went to He traveled through India without anything, and just sang God's name. Tasawwuf. The Sufis have beautifully expressed this in their poetry. It was only possible from the poets who had the God realization. One can tell it for the words came out spontaneously from their lips and pens, and also in their actions, that they do not have to create any maxims. They are the incarnation of everything they speak or write of. So what a thing to live up to. And in a way, this is what we have set ourselves, the goal that we have set for ourselves. This is what our yearning is about. This is what our longing is about. To live in that way and to fully embody these qualities and this love. Gataka. If they go to the Christian church or to the synagogue, to the Buddhist temple, to the Hindu shrine, or to the mosque of the Muslim, there is God. In the wilderness, in the forest, in the crowd, everywhere they see God. Tasawwuf. This has been expressed by many Sufi poets. Many have become suspect. Muhammad did not make the mosque an institution. He made prayer the institution. The Christian Bible also affirms that the human body is the temple of God. The outer forms are all reflections of this inner temple. The same spirit went into their constructions, and the devotee sees those efforts, knows the spirit, and thus can not only worship in many places and in all forms, but can glorify God with a spoken and written word about them. Gataka. This shows that the inner life does not consist in closing the eyes and looking inward. The inner life is to look outwardly and inwardly, and to find one's beloved everywhere. The inner life is to look outwardly and inwardly, and to find one's beloved everywhere. Tasawwuf. It is on this point where Sufis have differed from the generality and even suffered martyrdom. The great Sheikh Mubarak of the Mughal times and his sons Abu Fazl and Faiz could see the holiness in all faiths and all buildings. When they proclaimed that, all the different rival groups were against them. Each wanted his own way, not universality. But there is no doubt that God is in all, above all, and through all. And now we can see this and practice it. What was once confined to realized mystics can now be the point of view of everybody. We are so fortunate to have all these teachings and these ways, these practices open up to us, and that we can just dive in and give it a go. Gataka. But God cannot be made a beloved unless the love element is awakened sufficiently. The one who hates his enemy and loves his friend cannot call God his beloved or her beloved for they do not know God. So there is a practice for a lifetime, really, you know, this the differentiation, the distinctions that we make, when we have somebody in our life whom we like, who maybe has done something to us that we have benefited from, we call them friend. And the one who does something that we do not like or approve of, we call an enemy. So I'd like to do this, the Buddhist meditation. You probably or maybe are aware of that, and you know that the meditation of equanimity. So let's just find a really comfortable position and sitting with upright spine if possible, and feeling our body all relaxed, our shoulders relaxed, and our legs relaxed. And perhaps feeling just a little inward smile on our face to help relax our face muscles as well. And for a moment, let's just focus on our breath. Feeling the breath centering us. Feeling us centering in our breath. And then visualizing in front of us a person, somebody who we call our friend, somebody who we like. And just really bring to mind a particular person. And then consider all the qualities and things that make that person feel as if they are our friend. Perhaps they have done something, or they are continuously doing something that we like, or that benefits us or helps us. And just thinking of all these qualities that make them our friend, that make us label them as our friend. Now consider the notion that, you know, this there might be some people who don't like that person. And there might be some people who feel totally indifferent towards that person. So looking at that, ask yourself if it is an ultimate truth that this person is a good person, or is a ultimately a friend? Or could there be a situation when that person maybe does something or says something that we might not like? And that might result in us not caring so much about that person anymore. Or maybe we feel even angry with that person and consider them an enemy in that moment. So realizing that our perception of that person is not the universal truth, but it is our attitude, our perception in this moment that is subject to change. We now let this person dissolve. And bring another person into our mind, visualize another person. Somebody you might not know very well. Maybe it's somebody you kind of pass by every day but have nothing in common, or you don't maybe say hello to them because they are a stranger. Maybe it's somebody who works in your nearest supermarket, or maybe it's a bus driver, or somebody who you have met but who you don't really care about that much. You don't really care how their day goes, or you're not concerned about their happiness. Not particularly. And now consider for a moment that what if that person does something or says something to you that helps you? Something that supports you? And how your feelings about that person might change? And they might become your friend. Or you might develop warm feelings towards them. Or, on the other hand, if they say something or do something that you do not like, then they might become your enemy. So again, your attitude and perception is based on this momentary kind of situation, or your relationship to that person in this moment. And it might well change. So now let go of this person as well, and and bring to mind another person. Visualize in a space in front of you a person who you dislike, a person who is your enemy, or a person who has done you some harm, who you really struggle with. And really bring that person into your mind. And then look at the qualities or the traits that make this person your enemy. What did they do, or what did they say, or what happened? And again, consider a possibility that you meet this person in different circumstances, where they suddenly help you with something or say a kind word to you. Or maybe they don't like another person that you don't like either. So this sense of having a common enemy makes you suddenly feel united, and you might label them friend. So again, this perception is very personal in terms of how this person has done something that you don't like or that you don't approve of. And that could change. So now let this person kind of move a little bit more to the right in your field of vision or visualization. Imagine them standing on your right. And then invite back the person who was a stranger to stand in front of you. And then a person who is your friend to stand on the left of you. All these people who we just had strong labels for. Perhaps these labels have loosened their strength a little bit. And we can now look at all these three people and think, what is the common thing between them? And the one common thing between them all is certainly that none of them want suffering and all of them want happiness. So now let's consciously open our heart towards all these free beings, these free people. And also more widely towards all beings and animals and insects and all beings. They all have this one thing in common, that they want happiness and they don't want to suffer. So, by generating as much loving kindness as we are able to in this moment, with our breath, we can just send it out to all beings, breathing out love. Breathing in love. Breathing out loving compassion, loving kindness, and breathing it in to ourselves as well. Amen. So I read that last Gataka again that we read before. Welcome, Mia. But God cannot be made a beloved unless the love element is awakened sufficiently. The one who hates his enemy and loves his friend cannot call God his beloved, for he does not know God. Tasawuf. There are two obstacles here. One is those who make love a sort of thought or philosophy, an idea. And when it is thought or philosophy, when it is idea, it is not love. Love is universal. It is like a flame or a furnace that may have to be fanned. And when it is operating, its heat flows in every direction. One cannot stop it. That which is stopped is not love. When one reaches this state, it will be also that the body is warm, the hands are warm, the eyes and all elements of one's being radiate. And this can be aroused by repeating the names of God, constantly calling upon God, using wazifas, repeating mantras, and being aware of the universal life. Gataka. When love comes to its fullness, then one looks at the friend with affection, on the enemy with forgiveness, and on the stranger with sympathy. When love comes to its fullness, then one looks at the friend with affection, on the enemy with forgiveness, and on the stranger with sympathy. It's a beautiful practice to do to occasionally I go to literally I go to supermarket and then bring this practice of friend, enemy, stranger into mind and relate to somebody like at the checkout or something with sympathy, you could say. And you can sometimes see how it kind of affects them and lights them up. So it's sometimes it doesn't take a lot. It doesn't take a lot. It's just a small thing that we can do to make a difference in somebody's life in that way, or in somebody's day. Tassawuf. For then something happens to the personality and especially the eyes. These eyes cannot make differentiations. The glow of the lamp is in every direction. The sun is for the whole earth. When one pauses, there is a flickering in the light. It is not so strong. Gataka. There is love in all aspects, expressed when love rises to its fullness. And it is the fullness of love which is worth offering to God. It is then that we recognize in God our own beloved, our ideal. And by that, although we rise above the narrow affection of this world, in reality, we are the one who know how to love even our friend. It is the lover of God who knows love when they rise to that stage of the fullness of love. So we cannot be said to even love our friend fully if we have not awakened that sense. You could say that, if we have not come to that place of living the life as a bodhisattva, in other words. Tasavvuf, we find this throughout the Christian Bible, that it is not only the supreme teaching of Jesus Christ, but it has been repeated in the epistles and other writings. No doubt, it was Jewish heritage for the Jewish people. For the Jewish people were told to love God with all their hearts and souls and might, and then to love the neighbor as thyself. This was one aspect of it. I'm just looking at time and it's going very quickly. Oof. I'll read a little bit more and then we can finish with a song. This message of Jesus was to increase this love quantitatively and qualitatively. By quantitatively, we mean that the love began to be expressed not only to the Bnei Israel, but to the peoples in their midst. And then the message of Jesus also went forth to other peoples. And by qualitatively, it means that the quality of love was perfected in selflessness. That Jesus was willing to be crucified, symbolizing the ending of the sway of nafs and the ego. So increasing the love both, you could say sideways, like loving more and more beings, and at the same time growing this love inside us, purifying our being to feel and express the love more purely, more deeply. Sufism has at all times tried to make actualities out of these words. The Sufis have been the lovers of God and from that learned how to express kindness to their fellows. They did not make doctrines nor practice separateness. And in the Bayat, the disciple is urged to have the heart filled with love, overflowing with love. Gataka. The whole imagery of the Sufi literature in the Persian language, written by great poets such as Rumi, Hafiz, and Jami, is the relationship between human as the lover and God as the beloved. And when one reads understanding that and develops in that affection, then one sees what pictures the mystics have made and to what note the heart has to be tuned. To what note the heart has to be tuned. So we are tuning our hearts, you know, like Hazrat Inayat Khan says elsewhere, that to be a Sufi is to be in rhythm with life's conditions and attuned to the infinite. Attuned to the infinite at the same time as being in rhythm with life's conditions. So that's what we are attuning our hearts to. Tasawwuf, the most important part is to awaken the response in heart so that one can feel the heart of the poet and the sentiment, and then from that come into the awareness of the divine presence and the recognition of the love and beauty which are everywhere. There are Western poets who seem to have had similar outlooks and experiences, but not with the same warmth. And this is also true of poets of further east in Asia. So here, Murshid Sam is talking about, basically he's giving us a teaching on how to read the Sufi poetry. You know, we read these poems of, fill the cup, drink it up. You know, what do we fill the cup with? What is the wine? What is the cup? How do we fill it? And what does it mean when we drink it up? So there is a lot there already to take away. One last thing. Gataka. It is not easy to develop in the heart the love of God, because when one does not see or realize the object of love, one cannot love. God must become tangible in order that one may love God. But once a person has attained to love, they have really entered the journey of the spiritual path. So I think that's where we are going to stop this one for today. It's just all about love. So I'd like to finish with a song. We didn't do Wazifa practice today, but you can, you know, when you have time, when you go away from here, you can just connect with the wazifas, perhaps the Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, the love, the compassion, the mercy, love that we can radiate out and love that we can receive, love that we can shine out to all beings, and then that in turn comes back to us and feeds and nourishes our heart and our being. So we can they take that away when we go away from here. And I'd like to sing the Song of Songs. The Song of Songs. That is the English words are, "Set me as a seal upon thy heart. Set me as a seal upon thy arm. For love is as strong as death. Love is as strong as death." Also, because we are entering now into this time of souls. In different traditions, it is held in different ways. In my tradition, in Estonian kind of national tradition, it is called the time of souls. And it is a time when we really go inward, and it's and we light a candle and put it on the windowsill for the ancestors and those who have parted before us, who have gone, and we connect with these souls because the veil between the worlds is thin at that time, and we can more easily be in contact with those who have parted. So love is as strong as death. Love is stronger than death. So. Set me as a seal. Set me as a seal upon thy heart. Set me as a seal upon thine arm. Set me as a seal upon thy heart. For love is as strong as death. For love is as strong as death. Love is as strong. Upon thy heart, set me as a seal upon thine arm, set me as a seal upon thy heart, for love is as strong as death, for love is as strong as death. As a seal upon thy heart, for love is as strong as death. For love is as strong as death. Love is as strong. As a seal upon thy heart, set me as a seal upon thine arm, set me as a seal upon thy heart, for love is as strong as death. For love was as strong. So again, let's send out a feeling of love to all those we care about. And then also to those we have struggles with. And then also to the myriad of beings who we don't know, who we call strangers, who we don't care about very much, we still send out this feeling of love, goodwill, loving kindness, sympathy. May all beings everywhere be free of suffering. May they experience happiness. And may I develop these qualities to bring benefit to all beings and help them to get into that awakened state and finding total happiness. Amen. I